Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Back with you again for our second week of free agency. Not a whole lot of moves this week.
Not a lot of moves in Denver. Still some settling around the league, and we actually, on DenverBroncos.com, and I am Andrew Mason, by the way, ranked the top 50 free agents that were left, led off by Greg Hardy, who jumped to Dallas, and as my friend Bill Voth of the Black and Blue Report out in and that covers Carolina Panthers pointed out, he's now made a potentially $26 million in the last, you know, for this season, for last season and this upcoming season, even though he only played one game last year because he was on the exempt list and still got paid. So
he's
nice work if he can get it.
He's on a per game basis for the Cowboys, I think.
Yeah,
I think I saw.
Well, per game, it's I guess it's a very lucrative NFL answer to the 10-day contract.
Yeah, well, I imagine, what is it, almost $1 million per game?
Close to, I think it was a 13 a million, so that would
up
be.
Up to 13, I think.
Yeah, so you'd be
settling
750, 800 a game. Yeah.
It's not bad.
And there's, you know, it's the kind of the game-by-game contract almost. It's a roll of the dice for Dallas, but at the same time, they can, you know, if he slips up again, they can get out of it easily. But they can get out of it contract wise. Replacing him in the lineup once they get accustomed to his pass rushing abilities on the edge, that's a different matter entirely, because they're basically going to kind of revolve their defense around what Greg Hardy can do. So they're counting on him to keep his nose clean and not getting any legal entanglements as he did last year.
Yes, that'll be the key part. That was the only thing really, you know, keeping the other 29 teams out of discussions with him were those abuse arrests. And I think he had a speeding, I don't think it was an arrest, but he posted to his Twitter account going 100 miles an hour.
To say nothing of the armament he had in his apartment in downtown Charlotte. Or uptown Charlotte, depending on what you prefer. Something that a reference that only people from Charlotte will get.
Yeah, that Charlottians will understand about how, I guess, it's all about connotation.
You say Charlottians?
Yes.
I'd say charlatans.
Charlatans. Which is not inaccurate either, but I think uptown Charlotte, if you want to call it that, is a few feet higher than the rest of the city and kind of masked a naming change. They wanted to change it from downtown to uptown, because uptown is where nice things happen.
Yeah, it was a marketing construct back in the 80s, I believe. But, you know, to get back to Greg Hardy, I mean, it was, you know, the Panther, it was, you know, tough for the Panthers to try and get by without him. Eventually, they may do, but you know, for Dallas, like I said, they've just got to find a way to keep him on the straight and narrow. If they can,
they've got
an elite pass rusher. You know, that maybe they weren't expecting to get. So
there's no room for slip ups with Hardy, and he has to know that.
And there's a lot of temptations in Dallas, as we've seen. You know, going back even to the 1990s Cowboys.
But as for the Broncos, not a whole lot of movement here. I guess the most recent thing, was it the punter? That was like last week, I think.
Most recent pickup, it's been departures this week.
Yeah.
Mitch Unrein joining Orlando Franklin in San Diego. Unrein signed a 2-year deal. He was very gracious in his tweets to Broncos fans as he departed.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of a surprise, because John Elway last week discussed that
they wanted to get him back. Yeah.
And
he wanted to be back, from what he said to us.
Wonder if, you know, after the moves, you know, they signed a day after Elway made that statement, they signed Vance Walker. And Vance Walker is maybe a bit better of a scheme fit than Mitch Unrein was. Unrein at 306 pounds, even in a Wade Phillips 3-4, maybe a little bit smaller than you want in a nose tackle. Maybe you want that nose tackle around 315, 320, and not as not quick enough to maybe to make up for the lack of size that he would have, and then at 306 pounds, you know, not agile enough to be a 3 or 5 technique defensive end like you see with Derek Wolfe, Malik Jackson, and now Vance Walker. So it may be just simply that, you know, they wanted him back, but only at a league minimum veteran, 5-year veteran minimum contract, and the Chargers offered a little more, and the Chargers offered a 2-year deal, and so Mitch Unrein's gone, and Jacob Tammy on Thursday morning signed a 2-year deal with the Atlanta Falcons, as with Unrein, very complimentary toward the Broncos and their fans via Twitter as he departed. It's potentially a good move for Tammy personally because I think he's going to get a lot more snaps out of necessity in Atlanta than he would have here. Their tight end situation is a mess. It was the least productive tight end complement in the league in 2014, the Falcons' group of tight ends. They have so many needs on the roster. It's not necessarily a position they can afford to address this year unless they want to reach at a certain point in the draft. They have so many other needs elsewhere. I think this signing allows them an option to get by for a year until maybe you can draft a guy next year. But you know, good for Tammy for getting that deal. We saw him, you know, the last couple of years as his offensive role diminished, saw him become an outstanding special teamer. So he's going to be missed there. But on the offensive side, you know, he played 24.5% of the snaps last year. He was probably only going to play if Owen Daniels and Virgil Green got injured. So I think he's going to get more playing time. Probably the weird thing for Tammy is for the first time in his career, he's going to be on a team without Peyton Manning. Now, he played the 2011 season without Manning on the field in Indianapolis, but Manning was still on the sidelines. So two very good friends and now going in separate directions, at least from a football perspective.
Was Shelly Smith this past weekend?
Shelly Smith was Friday into Saturday, so yes. And so he would not he did not make the cut for our podcast last week. But
right. Former CSU guard, had a very good career there. I think I saw it his last season. He didn't give up a single sack. He had a very good year there, became one of the highest picks to come out of CSU in a long time.
And picked by the Texans, that was the key thing. Gary Kubiak saw him as an immediate fit for his own blocking. And he didn't get on the field during the regular season with Houston in his 2 years there. He finally saw some playing time in St. Louis and then signed a free agent deal with Miami that didn't work out primarily because of a knee injury that he suffered in week two. He's back to 100% now, and the Dolphins released him as part of quite the roster transformation that they had this month. But, they released him. The Broncos had interest. And one added benefit, because he was cut, he doesn't count as an unrestricted free agent pickup, so he does not count toward the calculation for next year's compensatory pick. So nice little bonus there for the Broncos as they try to maximize what they're going to get from that. To illuminate that further, you know, Jacob Tammy and Mitch Unrein are both UFAs, so they will go into the calculation for the Broncos next year. So each of them might merit a seventh round pick, depending how things end up shaking out. But Smith right now, you look at him battling with Ben Garland for the left guard spot. Mm-hmm. Maybe give Smith the advantage just because he has started in the league and he has experience.
Experience specifically in the zone blocking scheme.
Right, as well, and just starting experience around the league. And the Rams did a lot of zone blocking as well, so that was a good scheme fit for him when he was there. And I thought he had his best season with St. Louis in 2013, which got him the starting shot in Miami. So it'll be interesting to see how he progresses, but certainly at the very least an insurance policy in case Ben Garland doesn't pick it up. But I would say right now, if you were looking at the starting at the first team start offensive line for the Broncos based on guys currently on the roster, I think you'd pencil Shelly Smith in at left guard.
Now, well, it's been a little quiet here. It's been a little bit quiet around the division. You know, the Raiders had nearly $70 million, I believe, in free agency spending available, and they didn't really make a huge splash.
Not a huge splash. Frankly, some overpays, I think. Overpays on guys that that they're trying to reclaim. Mm-hmm. Christian Ponder, for instance, gets a potential $2.25 million deal for 1 year. Maybe you unearth something in him that the Vikings couldn't find, but if Derek Carr is healthy, where is snaps going to come from? You know, I think they would have been fake punts like Schaub. I think the funny thing is, I think the Raiders let go of Max Schaub, and I think Max Schaub, of an experienced veteran,
is better as a backup.
I think a guy like him might have been better sticking with him, even though he had a nice hefty cap number. Then Christian Ponder, a guy who's started parts of two seasons, Trent Richardson.
We'll see.
I think we know who he is at this point.
Yeah.
Roy Helu, I like as a pickup, as a guy who can be a change of pace back, which is really what they need at this point, given what they have in Latavius Murray. I think
that's what I'm a little confused about. Where does Trent Richardson fit in all that? I mean, I think they saw a lot out of Latavius Murray last year. He's shown a lot of quickness, a lot of dynamic speed. And
maybe the coaches don't like him as much. New coaching staffs change the internal perspective on players. I think there's some of that here, even with Gary Kubiak and his new staff, because they watch the film and maybe they have a different perspective on what a guy can do in their scheme than the previous staff did. Maybe they'll value some guys more than others, and I wonder if Jack Del Rio and his staff don't see that spark in Latavius Murray, and they do bring in Helu and they do bring in Trent Richardson to see what they can do. I mean, you look at Oakland's pickups, Malcolm Smith, Super Bowl MVP, Super Bowl 48 when the Seahawks beat the Broncos, had a terrible season last year. It's very reminiscent of the Larry Brown signing after he was Super Bowl MVP of Super Bowl 30, and the Raiders gave him a big contract. Nate Allen, I mean, he's vacillated between starting and even backing up at times in Philadelphia. They gave him a huge deal that could be worth up to $23 million over the course of 4 years, $7 million on this year's cap. I like the Dan Williams pickup for them on the defensive line. I think he's going to be perfect. Plug him in on the nose in Jack Del Rio's defense. I think he's going to flourish. But the Raiders, they got him. They got Dan Williams. They got Rodney Hudson. But I think they wanted to do a lot more in free agency than they were able to do. And part of that is skepticism over the franchise, I think, on the part of potential free agents, because they have not had a winning season since 2002.
Their culture is not one that's
no
engendered a lot of warm, fuzzy feelings.
The culture is unusual.
You don't know where they might be.
You don't know the location. Their current facility is not up to some of the standards of the newer and refurbished facilities like the one in which we sit right now, Dove Valley. So, and like you said, maybe they're going to be in L.A. next year. Who knows? They might even be in St. Louis in a couple of years.
Yeah.
If other teams beat them to L.A. and St. Louis is sitting there as a possibility with most of the money already earmarked for a stadium on the North Riverfront, to the point where the city and state have already worked out agreements with local unions to ensure that the work on the stadium will be 24 hours. They'll be in, 8-hour shifts round the clock. That's how far down the road St. Louis is planning for a new stadium is, and certainly, we all know about the L.A. stadiums. Oakland and San Diego, you don't see the same kind of movement that St. Louis has had, and St. Louis, frankly, has put this together in just a few months. So, so there's a lot of possibilities for the Raiders as for where they're going to end up when this is all done, and certainly I think that affects their ability to attract free agents. I mean, you look at Philip Rivers in San Diego, for instance. He's not a free agent, mm-hmm. but there's been chatter this week about how he doesn't want to extend his Chargers contract because he doesn't know if he wants to go with the team to LA if that's where they end up. Even though you look at the big money on these guys' contracts and say, oh, they could live anywhere. Knowing where you're going to be does matter, especially if you've got a family. You don't necessarily want to sign with a team and then uproot yourself a year later.
I think people kind of overlook the movement that some professional athletes have to go through. It's more mm-hmm. of an issue in some other sports that have more player movement.
Right.
But, I mean, just even for me, coming from North Carolina out here, I had to get out of a lease, and I mean that wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. And if someone had to do that twice a year, like Alonzo G, or seven times a year if you're Alonzo G, I mean that's got to be really hard.
Last week I referenced Anthony Goldwire, the all-time NBA leader in 10-day contracts, on Twitter.
I guess these days you have Airbnbs; you can just go 10 days.
You can, but.
It's not cost-effective.
No, it's not cost-effective. And these guys, let's say you're Rodney Hudson. You've cashed in. You got your big deal. You're set for life deal if you play your cards right. You'd like to buy a house.
Yeah.
Are you going to buy one in the Bay Area when you know the team might be moving in 12 months? It's just, that's the kind of, inconvenience. But for him also, I will say, they paid him enough to where I think he can afford any inconvenience, and it might be a little frustrating to pack up and move, but they made him one of the league's highest paid offensive linemen. And what's interesting is Stefan Wisniewski, the guy that he replaced, is still out there unsigned, although a lot of rumors connecting him to Seattle.
One of the things I want to talk about real quickly is the Raiders did not. One of the weaknesses they had was at wide receiver. They didn't really sign a big name or a lot of help there, and it looks like they might be setting up to draft Amari Cooper coming up as their number one receiver. And if that doesn't happen, I don't know what they do for wide receiver groups. They do another year without a super talented
I'm guy. Really surprised they didn't make a push for Michael Crabtree, mm-hmm. a real concerted push. I thought that would have been a natural fit for them. Amari Cooper, he's as I was talking about in a video that will be on DenverBroncos.com next week, he's plug and play. Of these, this is an outstanding receivers class, but he's the one that you can step in and say, he can step in and you can give him every down, and he will probably do fine. He's the closest to the finished product of any of the receivers in this year's class. But he's still a rookie. And even a guy like Sammy Watkins last year, as outstanding as he was as a rookie, there were some dry periods in the season. So, yeah, I'm surprised that they were not more active looking at potential receivers. I mean, it looks like Dwayne Bowe's off the market now. I wonder if they, given the Reggie McKenzie connection, I wonder if they take a look at Greg Jennings mm-hmm. for some veteran leadership, at they least the receiving core.
Going elsewhere around the league, Kansas City was not like the Raiders. They made a pretty big splash. I mean, obviously they started with franchise tagging Justin Houston, which is pretty obvious move they had to make if they couldn't get a long-term deal done. One of the best edge rushers that's out there, one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy just racks up sacks.
That was a they had to do that. Tom Bahaly took a restructure, so they were able to keep the two edge pieces, the edge combination together. They got out of the Anthony Fasano contract by cutting him. That helped because he was redundant. Travis Kelce's emerging as one of the better tight ends in this league, so they didn't need Fasano around anymore.
Redundant.
Yeah, but didn't have a lot of cap room, but managed to create some room to bring in Jeremy Maclin. Mm-hmm. The loss of Rodney Hudson certainly hurts that offensive line, especially when you look at the line in general. You have an underachieving number one overall pick from a couple of years back in Eric Fisher. So I think it might be a little bit of a struggle up front for the Chiefs this year, but they had to, they had to get Maclin. Of course, they let go of a Dwayne Bowe, but Bowe's numbers were declining. They, we know about how long it took them to finally get a touchdown from touchdown catch from a wide receiver last year. Maclin was
to wait as long with Maclin.
Yeah, I think Maclin might get that done in week one. Just a thought.
Might take quicker than 16 weeks.
Right, but I don't think they're done. I think with the quality of this year's receiving class, they're a strong candidate to take a wide receiver in the first round. Of course, I thought that was the case last year, and they took D. Ford.
Yeah.
Who I think will end up playing opposite Justin Houston, or he's an insurance policy in case they decide next year that Justin Houston's price is too high and decide to let him go.
But other than that for the Chiefs, they haven't made a whole lot of moves. They signed Jason Avant, Vance Walker, obviously came to the Broncos, Tyvon Branch, but I mean, most of these guys are kind of lower down. Josh Malga, Richard Gordon. I mean, they haven't exactly made a whole lot of splashes other than that.
Well, they haven't. I mean, they had to do some serious cap massaging and restructuring and cutting in order to make room for what they could bring in. So they weren't going to be among the free agency leaders just because they didn't have the space to do that. Unlike say Oakland, I think Oakland that's why Oakland has to be disappointed with what it's gotten out of free agency, because they had the cap space and they had frankly they had the inclination to go for so much more, and it really did not work out. San Diego, another team that had a lot of cap space, did do pretty well for itself, I think. Starting with Jacoby Jones, who I think still has something in the tank as a kickoff returner in particular. They brought him in before the league year started because the Ravens had cut him.
Yep.
Orlando Franklin up front, that's he will make that offensive line better. King Dunlap, they re-signed him. Brandon Flowers, I thought it was absolutely essential to re-sign Flowers after the season that he had last year. And you look at him and Jason Verrett and coming back from injury, and now their secondary is looking like one of the core strengths of the team. As we mentioned earlier, Mitch Unrein signed. He's going to be a good rotational guy for them on their defensive line. So they've a mix, and Stevie Johnson, wide receiver from from San Francisco and Buffalo earlier, that he's going to help them out, give them a little more depth there. And they've managed to kind of withstand the loss of Eddie Royal by bringing in Jones and Johnson. And don't forget they get guys back from injury. They'll have Danny Woodhead back in the lineup next year.
Well, injury was the biggest problem for them.
Yep.
I think having these improvements on the line are great.
And if they can get healthy at center, like they lost Nick Hardwick early, and then mm-hmm. he retired after the season, having lost, I think, close to 100 pounds. He didn't even look like the same guy. I mean, really, really good job by him to get the weight off going into retirement. Color me impressed. But they had to cycle through, you know, multiple centers as the season went on, and they found a couple of good potential long-term centers out of that. So I think back to when I was talking to people about the Chargers offensive line a couple of years ago, when Mike McCoy came in, and you could see that it was a mess. But over time, they've kind of built in, they filled in the gaps, added some pieces, seen some guys mature like a King Dunlap, who, you know, they picked up as a kind of a second tier free agent, and he's blossomed. You know, they drafted DJ Fluker. Now it's looking like an above average offensive line.
They were nearly a wild card team last year, and they've put together a solid free agent class, and they could make some noise next year.
They're 9-7 the last 2 years. It's good. It's winning seasons. There's a definite sense there that they need to take the next step. And I wonder how the potential relocation in L.A. and the stadium plan that was floated by the Chargers and Raiders last month for a stadium in Carson, in south of Los Angeles, I wonder how that's going to impact the team, especially if they find if the local fans turn on them. I mean, you can look, if it becomes evident that they're going to move, will the Chargers have any kind of home field advantage against anybody? Probably not. And how will that affect morale? I think they've got the pieces to have a very good season, and certainly can at minimum push the Broncos in the AFC West. Same with Kansas City. If they can get one more receiver to go along with Macklin, I think they can push the Broncos and make the task of getting a fifth consecutive AFC West title quite difficult. But with San Diego, you have the wild card of not knowing where the club's going to be. And that, you know, guys can say, oh, we're going to try to push through it. But whenever you've had situations like that in the past around the league, I look at the Houston Oilers before they moved to Tennessee, and you know they were mediocre. The Browns in 1995, when word broke they were going to go to Baltimore and become the Ravens, they completely collapsed. If you've seen the NFL Network A Football Life special, Cleveland 95, you know that story. And if you haven't, I recommend watching it next time it comes on the NFL Network. It's a real fascinating look into the genesis of Bill Belichick football as we've come to know it in New England, and B, just in how things went downhill so fast, and how it was impossible to reclaim that morale. As much as you can say, we're going to fight through it, one thing would go wrong and they would collapse. And if the Chargers face an uncertain future in San Diego, and all the headlines this fall are about, are they going to relocate? Is one foot out the door? It's going to wear on that team, like it or not.
Now, we can revisit this question after the draft and as we get closer to the season, but as the dust begins to settle on the second wave of free agency signings, obviously the Broncos haven't made a splash like they have in previous years, which is obviously, you know, just,
well, I mean, their splash was Chris Harris on a 5-year deal in December, Demaryius Thomas, $12.83 million franchise tag, and from all indications, the work is ongoing to make sure he gets a long term deal, just like Matt Prater and Ryan Clady did in previous years when they were franchise tagged. So that, and then Von Miller got his 5th-year option, and they'd like to do something long-term with him. That's where their splash had to be. I mean, yeah, it hurts losing those guys that the Broncos lost, but in keeping Chris Harris and Von Miller from the 2011 rookie class, they've got, you know, I think two of the three guys that maybe were the most unique talents, along with Julius Thomas, but was Julius Thomas really a fit for an offense that's going to ask its tight ends to block a little more, bit more than they have in the past? It's a fair question.
So do you think that the Broncos are still, I mean, obviously as four-time division champs in the past 4 years, mm-hmm. you still see them as the team to beat in the AFC West, despite other teams making some bigger signings like Kansas City.
They still are. The gap is narrowed, definitely. But what they're also counting on is a more dynamic defense, a more aggressive defense.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, you know, the Broncos had a highly ranked defense in terms of yards per game and yards per play, not as highly ranked in terms of scoring and in terms of forcing turnovers, you know, explosive defensive plays, takeaways, and sacks, you know, relative to on a per play or per pass play or per rate, they were middle of the pack. So they've, you know, and that's part of having a great defense too, is being able to get those takeaways and flip the field and flip the field with them when you need to. So they expect to be better at that. The offense, I think the Broncos expect this scheme to create a more consistent and efficient offense. Last year, you know, passing game started out doing very well, and then they went with a run emphasis late in the year. Never really got it all on the same page, except for the Miami game. That was, you know, that 39 points, and in my opinion, was the best offensive effort of the season because it melded the emerging ground game at the time with an efficient, especially in terms of vertical passing, an efficient aerial game when Peyton Manning completed 80% of his passes that day. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of game that you want to get to. They need more of that, and that's what they're hoping that Kubiak's offense brings out in Peyton Manning and the entire unit going forward. But, you know, the Broncos, I don't think they're worse, appreciably worse than they were a few weeks ago. But I think the Chiefs and Chargers, and even the Raiders, even though they've had a disappointing month, I think they're all better.
And, I mean, you still, as much as you have losses on offense, you still keep, I still think you kept all of the Pro Bowlers on your defense.
Yes.
And that's nearly half the defense.
Julius Thomas is the only Pro Bowler not coming back.
Right.
You lose Raheem Moore, but Darian Stewart had a good season last year, I think is intriguing because the one issue that he had in St. Louis earlier in his career was missed tackles, but he really improved in that area. Actually had a
he had 53 tackles.
Yeah, he had a better rate of missed tackles than Raheem Moore did. And really that's what you're counting on from your free safety alongside T.J. Ward. If you're going to give up big plays, don't make them bigger.
Yep.
So if he continues that progress, I think he'll be a good fit alongside T.J. Ward. If Danny Trevathan is healthy, you'll get Danny Trevathan and Brandon Marshall on the field at the same time quite a bit. That's going to help the defense.
Yeah.
Really, the big question is offensive line. In particular, right now, if you were putting forth the starting five, you know, maybe you'd have Manny Ramirez at center, but maybe you'd have Matt Paradis, the sixth round pick from last year. And I think certainly at this point, the way it's looking, if Michael Schofield will be the starter at right tackle, is he ready for that? That's the $64,000 question, but there may be other answers to those questions because the Broncos, I would expect to take multiple offensive linemen when they get to the draft, depending on how many picks they have. We'll learn the compensatory selections next week. John Elway expects to get 4, which would take them up to 10 picks in the draft, but we'll see.
That'll wrap up the podcast pretty much. Mace, do you have any thoughts about March Madness? We've already had an upset with Georgia State.
Yeah, at the time we've recorded, Georgia State's already had its upset. UAB had its upset of Iowa State. I'm kind of disappointed to see Iowa State go down. I like the flow and the pace at which they play. I don't want this tournament to become the parade of the plotters, although it may well be. Of course, that being said, my wife went to Wisconsin. I kind of like Wisconsin. They're kind of responsible for a lot of the plotting, so I shouldn't really say too much. But, never in recent history has the tournament storyline revolved around one team the way it appears it's going to with Kentucky. That's the first major conference team to go undefeated into the tournament since 1976 when Indiana did it, because you've had some unbeatens over the years, like Indiana State out of the Missouri Valley in 79, and St. Joe's out of the A-10 in 04, and Wichita State last year. But they were unbeaten, right, Wichita, going in?
I can't recall.
I think they were.
But no one's had a team this talented.
Yeah, no, this undefeated. This is the moment. So, you know, they've played at the level of their opposition all year. I think they'll continue to do that. And if they do that, they'll be home free. But that's what this tournament is all about. Well, that and chuckling at John Oliver rants about it in the days before the tournament.
Right now, I'm enjoying the annual Texas blow up in the first round. I think, what's their name's coach? Rick Barnes. He was good. Got his bonus.
He was good for those blow ups at Clemson too. It seemed like over the years, in Providence as well. I think had a couple of meltdowns when he was coaching there. But yeah, he got his bonus. Texas. A lot of people didn't want them in the tournament. Didn't think they'd earned it. Had a brutal schedule. Of course, the cause celeb for a lot of people in regards to the selection was right here from the Centennial State, CSU, not getting in, and then they went out in the first round of the NIT on Wednesday night and laid a tyrannosaur egg against South Dakota State. If you're going, Larry Eustace, their coach, he tried to rationalize it by talking about how they were, you know, emotionally spent and all that. If you're going to make your case that you belonged in the tournament, you don't go out and lose at home to South Dakota State. That's all you've done is cause, I'm sure, I mean, maybe the selection committee might not say it, but power conference people to say, see, told you, you guys didn't belong. So.
Meanwhile,
not a good week for hoops around here.
And meanwhile, UCLA, who is the team that most people thought shouldn't be in there, is beating SMU right now by 8 points in the second half.
Well, Larry Brown and UCLA have a little bit of a history, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Larry Brown has a history with pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
Is there any state in the U.S. that he hasn't coached at least one game? Okay, yeah. Okay, he probably hasn't coached a game in Alaska, but or Alaska's continental, but I'm sure he's coached a game in Hawaii, and he may have coached a game in Alaska back when the Great Alaska Shootout used to be a huge tournament.
Oh yeah,
and that's just we're just talking about college there. I say he's probably hit every state of the 50 because. The NBA preseason takes its teams to all sorts of exotic spots like Fargo, North Dakota, and Portland, Maine.
Montreal.
Well, they're not in the U.S., but.
Boy, I'm starting thinking about the whole continent now.
Yeah. Not just the states on the continent, but.
I'm talking other countries. Yeah. I'm sure they've been to Mexico.
Sure. Yeah, he's the peripatetic Larry Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And,
irritable leg syndrome, always moving around.
There's a lot more irritable about Larry Brown than just his legs.
Okay, with that, I won't keep us from March Madness any longer, or you, our dear listener, you can get back to the sweet first few rounds, I guess. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or just keep listening on the site. Thanks again. This is Ben and Mace signing off.